When Tahereh Mafi released Fracture Me in 2013, it quickly became a fan-favorite novella in her best-selling Shatter Me series. This companion piece offers a rare glimpse into Adam Kent's mind during the climactic events that bridge Unravel Me and Ignite Me. What makes this novella particularly fascinating is how it flips the perspective, showing us the dystopian world through the eyes of a soldier torn between love and duty. The novella has garnered praise from notable figures like Veronica Roth, Divergent series, who called it a masterful insight into the male psyche amid apocalyptic conditions. With over 2 million copies of the Shatter Me series sold worldwide, Fracture Me offers crucial character development that has made it required reading for fans seeking to understand the full emotional landscape of Mafi's meticulously crafted world. I wake to my little brother James trying to rouse me, calling me Addy, a nickname I absolutely despise. Our playful tussle quickly gives way to serious news. Warner has escaped overnight. This isn't just any prisoner breakout. Warner is the son of the Supreme Commander and our most dangerous enemy. His escape throws our entire resistance operation into jeopardy. The weight of this revelation is momentarily lifted when James begins crying, revealing his deepest fear, that I might die in the upcoming battle against the Reestablishment. The raw emotion in his 10-year-old eyes cuts straight to my heart. When he declares his desire to fight alongside me, I'm filled with both pride and terror. This child, this innocent boy, who should be playing with toys and attending school, wants to march into gunfire because of the broken world we inhabit. This moment crystallizes everything I fight for. In a world where family units have been systematically destroyed by the Reestablishment, James and I represent something precious and increasingly rare, a family bond that has survived despite everything. I've raised him since he was little more than a toddler, becoming both brother and father figure in a world determined to separate us. It's you first, I tell him, kneeling to meet his eyes. It's always you first and everyone else second. These aren't empty words. They're the foundation of my existence. While others in our resistance movement fight for grand ideals like freedom and justice, my motivation has always been more intimate. Creating a world where James can grow up without fear, where he doesn't need to learn how to handle weapons before he's mastered basic arithmetic. Our relationship forms the emotional core of my existence. In a narrative often focused on romantic love and revolution, this fraternal bond represents something equally powerful, the fierce, protective love that drives us to become better than we are, to sacrifice everything for someone else's future rather than our own. Breakfast brings its own complications when Juliet joins me at the table. The tension between us is palpable. I still want a future with her, but after what happened with Kenji, I'm terrified of what her lethal touch can do. Her appearance is alarming. Exhausted, red-rimmed eyes, trembling hands. She's clearly traumatized after nearly killing Kenji with her touch, regressing to her old coping mechanisms, counting rice grains, repeating words under her breath, retreating into the protective shell of her mind. When I mention Warner's escape, she drops her spoon with a clatter, looking strangely affected. There's something in her reaction that doesn't quite make sense, something beyond the expected fear of a dangerous enemy being loose. Has something happened between them that I don't know about? The question hangs in the air, unasked. Our relationship has always existed in this strange limbo between passionate connection and mortal danger. How do you love someone whose very touch could kill you? The irony isn't lost on me. In a world filled with weapons and warfare, the most dangerous thing might be the gentle caress of the woman I love. Later, as we prepare to leave for battle, Juliet grabs my shirt with desperate intensity, begging me to be careful. There's something different about her today, something she's not telling me. I used to think I could read her like an open book, but now her pages seem written in a language I no longer fully understand. This is the cruel reality of love in our dystopian world. It's never simple, never safe. Every moment of tenderness is shadowed by the possibility of loss. Every declaration of affection comes with the unspoken acknowledgement that tomorrow, either of us might be gone. We're all fractured people, trying to find wholeness in each other, even as the world continues breaking around us. What would love look like in a world not constantly on the edge of collapse? It's a question I rarely allow myself to consider, because the answer feels too much like a luxury we can't afford. The rain pours down in sheets as we head into battle, turning the world into a blur of gray. I'm freezing without the protective suits Kenji and Juliet are wearing, but physical discomfort is the least of my concerns. Our small team, me, a barely walking Kenji, and a mentally distant Juliet, moves under the cover of Kenji's invisibility toward the sounds of gunfire and screams. The battlefield reality is stark and immediate. We witness a soldier dragging a hysterical woman from her home, learning that civilians are being rounded up for execution. This isn't warfare. It's systematic extermination of anyone who might oppose the reestablishment's vision of order. My military training kicks in as we engage the enemy. Six soldiers have gathered 30 civilians for execution, hesitating only because of the torrential downpour. When Kenji finally releases us from invisibility, I take out the first soldier without hesitation. Years of training under Warner's command, before I defected, have made me efficient at this grim work. Kenji manages to take down three while invisible, and surprisingly, Juliet shoots the final soldier from behind. As we direct the civilians back to shelter, we continue toward the main battlefield, where the destruction becomes increasingly severe. Units on fire, fallen bodies, personal belongings scattered everywhere. The sounds of approaching tanks and distant explosions illuminate the horizon. Someone is dropping bombs. This isn't the controlled conflict we prepared for, it's wholesale slaughter. What strikes me most is how quickly Juliet's expression changes from fear to something cold and focused. This transformation worries me more than the enemy fire. She has no combat experience, yet Castle and Kenji have filled her head with false confidence about her abilities. They've made her believe she's invincible because of her lethal touch, but they haven't taught her the thousand small ways a soldier can die before ever getting close enough to use such power. As we approach the heart of the conflict, my thoughts inevitably turn to James. Did I make the right choice leaving him behind? Will I make it back alive? The battlefield is littered with broken promises. Soldiers who swore to return home, civilians who were guaranteed protection, leaders who promised victory. I desperately hope I won't become another broken promise in my brother's life. The battlefield exceeds my worst nightmares. Bodies piled everywhere, blood mixing with rain and mud in grotesque rivers. Enemy soldiers spot us immediately, and the fighting becomes chaotic and brutal. I take down one with a broken jaw, another with my knife. Someone charges me from behind, but Kenji, despite his injuries, saves me at the last moment. We fight effectively as a team, warning each other of danger, covering each other's backs. Years of training together have made us an efficient unit, anticipating each other's movements almost instinctively. But then I hear Kenji shouting my name with a note of pure terror I've never heard from him before. Suddenly, I'm invisible, and Kenji is screaming about Juliet being dragged away. We rush toward the road, only to see her limp body being loaded into a tank. My chest cracks open with fear as the tank drives away with her. In that moment, everything changes. Our mission parameters, our objectives, our chances of success, all transformed in an instant by this unexpected development. Kenji and I immediately decide to rescue her from Warner's base, taking the back route since his injuries prevent him from maintaining our invisibility. The plan forms quickly between us, a testament to our years of working together. But the universe isn't finished with its cruelties. Taking the back route, we unexpectedly encounter Castle, Ian, Alia, and Lily hiding in what we thought was an empty unit. They've rescued Brendan and Winston from Sector 45, both badly injured. But their news is devastating. they overheard soldiers planning an air assault to bomb Omega Point, our home base where James and the others remain, believing themselves safe. The realization hits me like a physical blow. James is still there. My little brother, the person I swore to protect above all others, is directly in the path of an imminent bombing. Despite Kenji's concern about abandoning Juliet, I insist we must save everyone at Omega Point immediately. The logic is brutal but clear. Warner won't kill Juliet, but James and the others face certain death. As we commandeer a tank to race back, my mind is consumed with a single thought. I made a promise to always put James first, and now that promise might be broken in the most terrible way possible. Eight of us cram into the tank, tension thick enough to choke on as we race toward Omega Point. Fear consumes me completely, unlike anything I've ever experienced. The sound of planes roaring overhead confirms our worst fears. The bombing has begun. I vomit from sheer terror, my mind filled with visions of James dying alone, wondering why his big brother wasn't there to save him. When we hear explosions in the distance, I break down completely, sobbing without shame. The tank eventually stops. There's nowhere left to go, nothing left to save. The silence that follows is more devastating than any explosion. Omega Point, our home and sanctuary, is gone. And with it, presumably, everyone inside. Then suddenly, a scream from Alia pierces the silence. She spotted something outside the tank. I bolt from our shelter, falling to my knees before someone I never thought I'd see again. James stands before me, sobbing uncontrollably. He apologizes for disobeying me, explaining he snuck out to join the fight because he didn't want to be a baby. The wet stain down his pants reveals how terrified he must have been, yet he still left safety to help us fight. I pull him into my arms, barely able to breathe, assuring him everything will be okay, even though nothing is okay and nothing might ever be okay again. This moment contains multitudes. Relief so profound it's physically painful, fury at his disobedience, pride in his courage, and overwhelming love that makes everything else insignificant. Had he stayed at Omega Point as ordered, he would be dead. His disobedience saved his life, a cosmic irony that isn't lost on me. The emotional whiplash is disorienting, plunging from the depths of despair to soaring relief in the span of seconds. This is what our world has become, a place where children must be both obedient enough to follow life-saving instructions and disobedient enough to save themselves when those instructions fail. It's an impossible standard, yet somehow this 10-year-old boy has managed it. I could kill him for the risk he took, but damn if he isn't one of the bravest people I've ever known. Back in the tank, the reality of our situation sinks in. We have nowhere to go. Despite my relief at finding James, the magnitude of our loss is overwhelming. Omega Point is destroyed. Our friends and allies are presumed dead. We have no base, no supplies, and no plan. Castle, our leader, sits catatonic, unable to process the destruction of everything he built. Only Kenji maintains any sense of self-preservation, stepping up as our leader when no one else can function. His resilience is remarkable. Despite his injuries and exhaustion, he takes command naturally, making decisions when the rest of us can barely think straight. This is a side of him I've rarely seen, the soldier beneath the Joker's mask. As darkness falls, exhaustion claims us all, and sleep becomes our only escape from the horrors we've witnessed. I hold James close, his small body a reminder of what little I have left to lose and what I still have to protect at all costs. The morning brings an eerily peaceful sunrise that belies yesterday's horrors. Kenji had driven us to a remote location and used his last strength to keep the tank invisible overnight. as James awakens beside me, immediately full of questions that disturb everyone else awake, I'm struck by his resilience. Children adapt so quickly, finding normalcy even in the most abnormal situations. After brief morning exchanges, Kenji brings up our urgent need for shelter and food. James suggests our old house, which seems perfect since Warner won't look for us if he believes everyone from Omega Point is dead. With Castle still unresponsive and traumatized, we agree on the plan and head toward home, relieved to have somewhere safe to take James, at least temporarily. This is what survival looks like in our world. Not grand victories or heroic stands, but small decisions that keep us alive one more day. Finding shelter, securing food, protecting each other. The revolution has been reduced to its most basic components. Stay alive, keep moving, don't give up. The roads are deserted as we drive through the biting cold air. James sleeps against me while I reflect on what the reestablishment is likely doing now, cleaning up battle remains quickly to prevent civilians from grieving their dead. I think about how many such missions I participated in under Warner's command before I understood the full horror of what I was doing. The pain of thinking I'd lost James has changed me forever. Raising him has given my life purpose, and now I understand the true cruelty of the reestablishment's family separation policies in a way I never could before. I know I could never be part of something like that again, never return to the soldier I once was. We arrive safely at our underground parking garage and make our way into our old apartment. The door is still damaged from when Warner's men broke in months ago, but everything inside remains mostly as we left it. I find plenty of food supplies while James races to his bedroom, excited to be home despite everything that's happened. Everyone except Castle, who remains silent and withdrawn, celebrates the discovery of food and shelter. Kenji organizes bathroom rotations and ration awareness while I promise to help patch up Brendan and Winston with my limited medical supplies. Later, Kenji confronts me about rescuing Juliet, surprised by my hesitation. I'm torn between my love for her and my fear of endangering James again. The weight of responsibility presses down on me from all sides, to my brother, to the woman I love, to our cause, to the survivors who now depend on me. This is the burden of leadership that I never wanted, making impossible choices between equally valid obligations. Do I risk everything to save Juliet, potentially leaving James orphaned if I fail? Or do I stay safe with my brother, abandoning the woman I love to whatever fate awaits her with Warner? There are no clean answers, no morally pure choices. This is what the reestablishment has reduced us to, constantly choosing between terrible options, sacrificing one love for another, one principle for another. The system is designed to break us this way, to force us into compromises that slowly erode our humanity. Kenji returns just hours after leaving to gather intelligence, looking ashen and trembling. His distressed appearance immediately sends me into panic as everyone asks what happened. After a long silence, he delivers three devastating words: Juliet is dead. Chaos erupts as questions fly and screams are muffled. I'm stunned, my brain paralyzed with grief. Kenji explains that Anderson's men, not Warner's, bombed Omega Point, captured Juliet, and killed her that morning. He blames himself for not staying behind to find her, but the others try to console him. I can't join their circle of mutual comfort. I trip backward against the wall, knowing the terrible truth. Juliet is dead because of me. Because I chose James over her. Because I didn't fight harder to rescue her immediately. The guilt is crushing, a physical weight that threatens to collapse my chest. What Kenji doesn't know, what none of us could know, is that Juliet isn't actually dead. She's with Warner, who saved her life after she was shot in the chest by his father. She believes we're all dead, just as we believe she is. This tragic misunderstanding separates us as effectively as any physical barrier could. While we mourn her, she mourns us. While we plan our next move without her, she contemplates life without Adam, without Kenji, worrying about young James. Though they'd been growing apart, she'd hoped staying away would keep him safe. This is the final fracture in our already broken world. Not just the physical destruction of our base, but the emotional severing of connections based on false information. We are all making decisions based on incomplete knowledge, all moving forward on paths that might never reconnect. Through her tears, Juliet forces herself to make one final choice: give up or go on. She chooses to get to her feet, swallowing back tears and clenching her fists, tucking her friends in her heart as thoughts of revenge begin to take hold. And I, believing her dead, must make the same choice. Do I surrender to grief and guilt, or do I continue fighting for the world James deserves? Do I honor Juliet's memory by giving up or by going on? The answer, of course, is that I must go on. For James, for the resistance, for the memory of what Juliet and I almost had. In a world fractured beyond recognition, the only path forward is to gather the broken pieces and build something new from the shards. This is the legacy of our shattered world. Learning to create meaning from destruction, finding strength in what remains, and choosing, always choosing, to go on rather than give up. Because in the end, that's all revolution really is. The stubborn refusal to accept that this broken world is all there can be. What happens next remains unwritten in this novella, but the stage is set for the dramatic conclusion in Ignite Me. The fractures between us, physical, emotional, informational, have created a complex web of misunderstandings and crossed purposes. Juliet believes we're dead and sets her mind toward revenge. We believe she's dead and must decide how to continue without her. These parallel journeys of grief and determination will eventually converge, but not before each of us is fundamentally changed by the experience of loss. When we do finally reunite, we will be different people than we were before, harder in some ways, more vulnerable in others. All of us permanently marked by what we believed we had lost forever. This is perhaps the most profound insight of Fracture Me, that sometimes we must be broken apart before we can come together in new, stronger configurations. The fractures that separate us are not just obstacles to overcome, but necessary transformations that allow us to become who we need to be. My journey from soldier to deserter to resistance fighter to brother has been defined by these breaks and reformations. Each time I thought I knew who I was, the world shifted beneath my feet, forcing me to reconsider my identity, my loyalties, my purpose. The only constant has been James, my anchor in a world of perpetual change. As the novella ends and the larger story continues beyond these pages, one truth remains clear. In a fractured world, the strongest bonds are those that can bend without breaking, that can stretch across distance and misunderstanding, that can endure even when everything else falls apart. Whether those bonds are between brothers, between lovers, or between comrades in a revolution, they are what makes survival not just possible, but meaningful. The future remains unwritten, but whatever comes next, we will face it as we have faced everything else, together when possible, apart when necessary, but always connected by the invisible threads of love and loyalty that even the reestablishment, with all its power, can never truly sever.